Good morning and welcome to Spotlight 92. I'm your host, Malvin Massey. Of course, every Thursday we talk to the movers and shakers of the Memphis community, the people that are making things happen for your benefit and mine. And our guest today is, very familiar voice to WUMR and a good friend of the station, as well as the University of Memphis, although he defected and went over to Rhodes College, but we won't hold that against him. He is here to talk about communities in conversation at Rhodes College, celebrating Ida B. Wells at 150. And we recently did that here at the University of Memphis. And so it's very appropriate that the colleges in Memphis are making note of Ida B. Wells' presence. Our guest this morning, the illustrious Jonathan Jadakin. Dr. Jonathan Jadakin. Jonathan, thank you so much for being a guest.
Malvin, I really appreciate your having me on. It's a pleasure to get to talk to you.
Yes, yes. And so tell us a little bit about what Rhodes College is doing in conversations, communities in conversations about Ida B. Wells.
Well, Malvin, as you already mentioned, there's a citywide celebration of Ida B. Wells going on. This year is the 150th anniversary of her birth. She's born in Holly Springs, Mississippi, just about 40 miles from Memphis, and came here at the age of 18. Memphis became the crucible for all the important work that she did as a pioneering civil rights activist and women's rights activist, and of course, most famously, as an anti-lynching advocate. So Rhodes is part of the citywide celebration. Professor Royster was at University of Memphis, as you mentioned, and there's going to be some events at University of Memphis again after hours. But we've got some really exciting things coming up at Rhodes. On the 29th at 7 o'clock, Paula Giddings, who is a professor of African American Studies at Smith College and the author of the definitive biography of Ida B. Wells, Ida, A Sword Among Lions, is going to be giving a keynote lecture here.
Okay. As a matter of fact, I see that on the schedule here, this is a whole, for both days are full of events.
There's things going on over a two-day period, and actually they begin a little bit before that. Mayor Wharton will be on campus at Rhodes to christen the new Memphis Center, opening this new institution at Rhodes College that is going to be integrating a number of the activities of the college vis-a-vis the community, including the Crossroads to Freedom Digital Archive and a number of other projects that Rhodes is doing that are connected to the broader Memphis community. And part of the reason is also part of the reason for this event in general is so that we can begin to create some momentum to create a permanent public memorial to Ida B. Wells in the city. This is something that's been an effort that people have undertaken over a number of different years, and we're hoping that this set of events that we're a part of will further that process. So we're excited to have the mayor joining us, and then Paula Giddings giving her public lecture. And then the next day, we're going to be continuing at 4 o'clock in Blunt Auditorium. A younger scholar named Amy Wood, who has written an award-winning book called Lynching and Spectacle, will be speaking. I didn't know before I got involved in this event that lynching wasn't a phenomenon of, you know, a few men wearing hoods doing terrible, horrible, no, almost unspeakable things in the backwoods in the dark. In fact, lynchings were oftentimes mass spectacles involving hundreds, if not thousands, sometimes tens of thousands of people. When the police showed up, it was often to engage in crowd control. These things were announced in the newspapers. Children were sometimes let out of school in order to be there.
That's part of why this is so important right now, to let people know. A lot of people are not aware of the spectacle of lynching. We've seen it on a couple of movies as far as the Hanging Judge, cowboy movies and things like that. A lot of people don't realize that was a real entertainment event.
Yeah, it's hard for us, I think, to get our head around that, and that's partly as a result of the kind of work that Ida B. Wells did. So the lecture on Tuesday by Amy Wood at 4 o'clock is going to be all... So these events then ended up being photographed, and those photographs were turned into postcards, and those postcards were then sent back and forth between people. So oftentimes people would write things. We have these postcards where they write things and say, look at what I did last Sunday, and then go on and sort of give the rest of their news. And this is the way it became a mass spectacle. And Amy Wood is going to help us to try and understand that through a focus on lynching photography. But then also look at the ways in which activists like Ida B. Wells use those same images in order to expose the barbarism and horror that was lynching. And it's really that work that came to transform those images into being the record of how brutal lynching was, and in turn eventually beginning slowly over time to root that out as the most important way in which racism was perpetuated in the Jim Crow era, really until the civil rights movement. Yeah.
And it was interesting in Dr. Royster's speech at the conference. And the history, like I was saying, the history of Ida B. Wells' early life, and what led to her starting to write, what led to her writing the article that got her eventually banned out of Memphis, Tennessee. That history was so interesting as far as the fact that she had to struggle not only as an African-American, but as a woman to achieve the journalistic abilities that she had.
Yeah, and that's going to be the focus of the last event that we're going to do, is really depicting that story. And we have had two wonderful faculty members, Dave Mason from the theater department and Rashetta Watkins, who have gotten together and written this one-act play that tells that story in very poetic and beautiful, in a very poetic and beautiful way, with original music that's being done for this, created by Emmanuel John Tay and John Bass under the auspices of the Mike Kerb Institute for Music. It's going to be like a one-hour, one act that'll happen at 6 o'clock in Hardy Auditorium. And basically, it's going to tell the story, it's going to tell Ida B. Wells's Memphis story. So very briefly, you know, at 16 years old, both of her parents are killed by the yellow fever epidemic. Mm-hmm. And rather than allow her family to be dispersed, Ida B. Wells decides that she will become the caretaker of this family of six siblings. She dresses herself up in order to look older. She gets help getting a teaching position in rural Mississippi. And then at the age of 18, she's invited to come to Memphis. And Memphis really opens up and expands the possibilities of her own cultural development in organizations like the Lyceum, which was this a group of Memphis school teachers who got together to read Shakespeare and to write to one another. And Ida B. Wells begins to do her first public writing in the context of the Lyceum. This is a moment in Memphis history when African Americans are really beginning to rise and climb out of the experience of slavery and become a part of the middle class. Ida B. Wells then becomes famous because she refuses to sit down to give up her seat that she had purchased in a first-class carriage on a train. And more than 70 years before Rosa Parks refuses to give up her seat on a bus, Ida Wells refuses to give up her seat on a train. And that became a very important case about civil rights in the longer history of civil rights that's now starting to come to light. And her first national writing was done about her experience in that case, and then which was eventually overturned by the Tennessee Supreme Court. At that point, she's the most famous school teacher in Memphis, and has established herself as a journalist who's writing for African American newspapers around the country. And then her good friend Thomas Moss who was a postman and who had established a cooperative with two other friends in South Memphis called the People's Grocery, is effectively lynched. The competitor for the grocery with a mob raided the grocery. The African Americans who were connected to the store fired back. Some people were injured. The three owners are put into jail, and then a mob forcibly takes them out of jail, takes them out, and lynches them. And this this becomes a real eye-opening experience for Ida Wells, because she herself believed the lie that lynchings were really about the barbaric behavior of brutish African-American men who were raping pristine white women. But she knew the people who were involved in this case, and so she knew it was a lie, and she begins to engage in investigative journalism to learn more about the facts of the case. And it turns out that in many, many, many of these cases, there were licit relationships that were happening between men and women, white women, black men. But in many cases, this was just a trumped-up charge. It didn't have anything to do with the case that was at hand. And she publishes an editorial in 1892 in a newspaper that by this point she's begun to run, the Free Press. She's a co-owner of that newspaper. And when that editorial hits the press, the white elite in Memphis meet. They meet at the Cotton Exchange. Yeah. They make a decision that whoever has written that newspaper is no longer in town. The commercial, the antecedent to the commercial appeal, writes an editorial which basically sanctions lynching for the brutish activities of those people who are involved in these sorts of things. The newspaper is trashed, and luckily Ida B. Wells was out of town at that time. She was on her way to New York, but effectively she never is able to come back to Memphis after that. She lives in exile, but she goes on with the support of club women across the Eastern Seaboard who support her cause, who hold a dinner and that raises enough money for her to publish the first anti-lynching pamphlet that she writes called Southern Horrors. That title says it all, Southern Horrors. To become a major anti-lynching activist. And then afterwards, she begins to lecture across the United States and then eventually in Great Britain and elsewhere to raise the cause of lynching. And she'll go on from there to become a founding member of the NAACP and an activist in Chicago, and then eventually run for state senator. So she's really, you know, carving a path that enables something like President Obama to eventually come to prominence as a community activist in Chicago and eventually become the first black president of the United States. She's a real pioneer, and what we're hoping to do with this series of events is finally to welcome Ida B. Wells back to Memphis.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, if you just tuned in, by the way, this is Spotlight 92. We're talking to Dr. Jonathan Jadakin, who is the host of Counterpoint here at that we air here on WUMR. And he's also former director of the Marcus Orr Center for the Humanities here on the campus of the University of Memphis. And he was stolen from us by Rhodes College. And he is, doing his thing over there right now. But we are talking about Rhodes College's Communities in Conversation, which is presenting Celebrating Ida B. Wells at 150. And it's a celebration on 2 days, October the 29th and the 30th, at the Rhodes College and in several different facilities at Rhodes College. But the celebration begins at 5 p.m. with Mayor Warden on the campus of Rhodes College to christen the new Memphis Center. And then at 6:30 p.m., a public reception will lead to the keynote address by Paula Giddings, who will give a lecture titled A Sword Among Lions, Ida B. Wells and the Campaign Against Lynching. Then on Tuesday, October 30th at 4 p.m. in Blunt Auditorium, Amy Wood, Associate Professor of History at Illinois State University, will present Lynching and Spectacle, Ida B. Wells' Anti-Lynching Activism and the Use of Photography as Testimony. Gosh, man, that's a new one on me there. And then at 6 p.m. in Hardy Auditorium on the 30th, it is a play, the debut of an originally produced one-act play and musical tribute, Iola, created by Rosetta Watkins and Dave Mason. And it is drawn on Ida B. Wells' writing to create an emotional portrait of her Memphis years. It's all going on as part of the citywide tribute to Ida B. Wells on the, what would have been her 150th year.
And can I just say that it actually continues the next night on the 31st at University of Memphis. Deborah Gray White will be giving a lecture at University of Memphis. She's another leading scholar of African-American women's history, and her talk is called Brown Sugar Melts, African-American Women at the Turn of the Millennium. And then in November, there's going to be the annual Ida B. Wells Philosophy Conference that the philosophy program at University of Memphis hosts. That's November 16th and 17th. There are some really amazing philosophers who work on the philosophy of race who will be at University of Memphis. So all of this began with the exhibit at the Pink Palace called Women of Strength, Women of Color, that just ended. And so I think finally, with all of this set of events, we're beginning to create a little momentum in the city for honoring one of Memphis's icons, a real intellectual titan who Memphis, you know, ought to be celebrating and ought to have a public space permanently commemorating the kinds of contributions that she made.
Yeah. And, you know, when I think about it, the city of Memphis, right? Like you said, the yellow fever epidemic killed her parents. Well, this yellow fever epidemic nearly destroyed the city. And it was saved by bonds purchased by Robert R. Church, another African-American. And it's amazing to me that from the time of that situation, when the city almost lost its charter because everybody was dying or leaving and being rescued by an African-American, to the idea of the lynchings that Ida B. Wells witnessed of her friends, then on to the lynching period, certain different things that have happened over the years. It is just amazing that there is nothing around here in this area that speaks of those things.
There are a few things around. There's just not enough. So, for example, there is this small commemorative plaque that's on Beale Street at the location of the Free Press, where the newspaper was ransacked. There's apparently a charter school in Memphis. A number of those students are going to be at the Rhodes celebration called the Ida B. Wells Academy. So there are some tokens of appreciation, but for the kinds of contributions and the kind of symbol that Ida B. Wells is, really there ought to be a bigger recognition of the kind of role that she played, and also the kind of symbol that she is for us. This is a story of someone who picked herself up by her bootstraps and, you know, was able to do the kinds of things that she did because of getting an education, because of the use of her pen in order to communicate her ideas. She's someone who really changed the world, and she learned how to do that all in the context of a Memphis that whose history we ought to know in a deeper kind of way, and her story allows us to access that larger story of Memphis.
Yeah. You know, I thought about the idea, too, like you said earlier, that her influence was worldwide. After she got to New York and was told not to come back to Memphis on pain of death, her influence was worldwide. And I think of an article that I once read in the U.S. News and World Report about nothing that changes, makes major changes in the world. No one incident can cause a major change, but a series of incidents. And I think of Harriet Beecher Stowe and her Uncle Tom's Cabin as being one of those seeds that started the Civil War. And Harriet Beecher Stowe and her articles and her pamphlets started the seeds to put a stop to lynching in America. And I don't think that anybody really pays much attention to that either. Do you think that her work was that influential, that it started that trend towards stopping the lynching?
Well, Malvin, I think there are two reasons why we don't know as much about Ida B. Wells as we should. The first is Ida B. Wells was a woman. And you started off by saying that that's one aspect of it. So as the freedom movement gets going in the aftermath of the Civil War, you know, long before 1954 and the Civil Rights Movement, there was already a struggle at work. That movement, like all social movements in that period, come to be dominated largely by men. So that's one aspect of the story. The other aspect of the story is Ida B. Wells really is a radical. She worked a lot with Mary Church. You mentioned Robert Church in the aftermath of the yellow fever epidemic, re-enabling the chartering of Memphis. She worked with Mary Church, who became Mary Church Terrell, but she was a lot more radical than some of those kinds of folks were. And specifically in the aftermath of this lynching, she called for African Americans to boycott white businesses. But she also called for the leaving of Memphis, and thousands of families begin to participate in what comes to be called the Great Migration as a result of that call. The other thing, though, that she did was to say, in the face of not having any recourse to legal mechanisms of justice, African Americans needed to arm themselves. That's an antecedent to the Black Power movement. So in all kinds of ways, she was a real pioneer. But I think for those two reasons, she was a woman who had to navigate the Victorian ethos about what the role of women ought to be, and she oftentimes transgressed those sorts of boundaries. Mm-hmm. And secondly, she was a radical. And I think for those two reasons, her story is less well known than it ought to be. And we hope that these events become a part of changing that fact, so that we all know more about who she was and what she has to teach us about our own past, but also about where we need to go in the future.
You know, I think about Dr. Royster's speech, and she mentioned the fact that when we think about Ida B. Wells and back in those days, we generally think of an older woman, but she was pretty young at the time of all of this going on, wasn't she?
She was very young. She comes to the city in 1880. She's 18 years old at that time. She leaves in 1892. She's 30 years old. Can you imagine taking over the role of your family at the age of 16?
Yeah.
She's in the classroom in front of students already, you know, teaching a group of students already at that age. So at a very young age, I mean, she's become part of the National Press Corps at a very young age. And who knows what she would have done. I mean, you talked a little bit about her being a woman as well. She will eventually go on and end up marrying Mr. Barnett. So she becomes Ida Wells Barnett. And partly because of having children and because of the difficulties of being both a mother and an activist, it became difficult to sort of navigate between those two lives. So even in the very embodiment of what it means to be a woman and to have children, but to also have a career, even in that way, Ida B. Wells was well ahead of her time. She's young and she's a prophetic voice who we need to know more about and learn from.
And definitely recognize here in this area. If you just tuned in again, by the way, this is Spotlight 92. We're talking to Dr. Jonathan Jadakin. And he's speaking with us today about Rhodes College's Communities in Conversation, which presents Celebrating Ida B. Wells at 150. The events, all these events, by the way, are free and open to the public, beginning on Monday, October 29th at 5 p.m. with Mayor A.C. Warden on the campus of Rhodes College to christen the new Memphis Center that has been developed at Rhodes College. And Jonathan, you had—I just know you had something to do with that. And then at 6:30.
Well, no, I can't take credit where it's not due. And the Memphis Center really is under the direction of Milton Moreland and a number of different faculty members all across the Rhodes campus. Something that was at work well before I got here. But it's an important center for Rhodes College, and it's an important center for Memphis because Rhodes will facilitate this as a nodal point that will allow the institution to intersect with the community in all kinds of ways. Public lectures, through a process of digitizing a lot of the history of Memphis and helping to, you know, create the basis for future research that's done about the city. It's a really important center, but I honestly can't take any credit at all for it being here.
Well, okay. But, you know, I always think that you are such an innovator. I always think you start everything. And at 6:30 p.m., that's this again on October the 29th at 6:30, a public reception will lead into the keynote address by Paula Giddings, who will give a lecture titled A Sword Among Lions, Ida B. Wells and the Campaign Against Lynching. That'll be at the Bryan Campus Life Center on the campus of Rhodes College. Then on Tuesday, October 30th at 4 p.m. in the Blunt Auditorium, Amy Wood, who is an associate professor of history at Illinois State University, will present Lynching and Spectacle, Ida B. Wells' Anti-Lynching Activism and the Use of Photography as a Testimony. And, you know, that's something else, too, when you think about the books about the old cowboy days and the pictures of the Billy the Kid and the Dalton gang and all those guys, and when they were shot, you know, they put them on a board, put the bodies up on a board and take a picture and make a poster out of. I didn't even think about lynching being done like that. That's amazing. And then again, and that's going on at the Buckman Hall. The reception will follow in the Buckman Hall Library. That's also on the campus of Rhodes College.
No, the reception will be in Buckman Hall, but it's not a library.
I mean, in the lobby of Buckman Hall.
That's right.
And then at 6 p.m. in Hardy Auditorium, the debut of an original produced one-act play and musical tribute, Iola, which is created by Rosetta Watkins and Dave Mason, and the piece draws on Ida B. Wells' writing to create an emotional portrait of her Memphis years. And that's going to be very exciting. And then carrying on over to the next day on October 31st, it will be the 14th annual Graduate Association of African American History Conference here at the University of Memphis. It's from October 31st to November the 2nd. And this year's keynote speaker is Deborah Gray White. And she's a leading scholar of African American women's history, whose talk is entitled Brown Sugar Melts, African American Women at the Turn of the Millennium. And that conversation goes on to the 6th annual Ida B. Wells Philosophy Conference, November 16th and 17th, which is also here at the University of Memphis. A lot of activity in the college circuit around Memphis, Tennessee, in honor of Ida B. Wells at 150. She would be 150 this year.
She was born in July, 1862. She died in March of 1931. So our celebration is during the 150th anniversary of her birth, not exactly on her birth date, but in between those two dates, and really at a nice pivot point in the course of the calendar year to begin a process again that we're hoping will swell to a movement to publicly commemorate Ida B. Wells in a permanent way in the city of Memphis. You know, we're really good in Memphis at celebrating the amazing musicians who came out of this area, who came up out of the Delta and helped create blues music and helped create rock and roll and helped create soul music. And we're less good at celebrating the intellectual icons who come out of Memphis. And Ida B. Wells is one of those people, like Richard Wright and others. And I think it's time for us to begin to build a pantheon of those intellectual heroes in Memphis, because once we do that, we start to paint a different kind of picture about what the impact and importance of Memphis has been within the history of America and within the history of African Americans in America, and more broadly, the impact that all of those kinds of people have had who came up and came out of Memphis on a global in a global way that really are kind of, you know, the sorts of figures that the philosopher Hegel would have called, you know, kind of great figures on horseback who really made history and transformed the world as a result of the kinds of things that they did.
Right on. Well, again, Dr. Jonathan Jadakin, our guest for Spotlight 92, and all this information will be in public service messages here on U92 FM, and you can also hear Jonathan Jadakin as the host of Counterpoint that airs on Tuesday here at U92. And Jonathan, thank you so much for being a guest again, Doc.
Malvin, I really appreciate your time, taking the time to help get the word out about this important event, and just love Spotlight 92. Really brings us so much, information about great stuff going on around Memphis.
Well, thank you too. All right, and this has been Spotlight 92. We'll do it again next week. In the meantime, you're back for more of the best in jazz. This is U92 FM.